Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. Hello and welcome to the Roguecast, episode 76 for August 26th. We have a special guest with us here today.
Right. We're having, you know, there's a tradition of team-ups in superheroes.
Exactly right.
We got a team-up going on.
And this makes us, he was on last week's podcast, too.
What? I don't know how I feel about this. Joining us today is Jarek Stewart.
What's up?
Customer, volunteer, friend.
The guy who made that music you just heard.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And, originally we were going to have you sit in for a little segment we were doing later on. But we're like, join us for the whole thing.
Yep. So Jarek's going to be here. He hasn't read all the comics this week, so whatever he says about the comics, don't believe him. But otherwise, whatever, you know.
Feel free to chime in on all topics, even if you're like, I haven't read that comic.
I haven't read it, but it's the greatest thing ever.
Yes, that's exactly
right. Okay,
sell it
good.
To people.
Whatever Dave said.
All right, so first off, the bit of news. Last week we introduced the Rogue card. We have a few members already.
Yep.
But if you have an interest in their membership, you can find more details on that on the website. But basically, it's $35 a year for extra bonus discounts.
I'm excited. These people will, as of like this Wednesday, when the new stuff starts hitting, they're gonna be able to apply.
That's right.
Because it goes towards things like our staff picks, which there's always a ton of them.
Yep.
So they're just right out of the gate.
Plus
also
the game of the month, which is going to be Dixit, which is the picture matching game. It's a really fun sort of game with really beautiful picture art.
And so a popular game, you might as well get a discount
right.
on it.
You get 10% off if you're a Rogue member.
Mm-hmm.
And that is going to be our Gaming with Rogue selection. It's going to be on September 21st at Kirby Lane. You get an additional 10% off our Reading with Rogue selection.
Oh, that's right.
Which is, you already get 15% off during the month it's available. So you get 25% off on the book if you have a Rogue card.
And this current one is Lazarus, which has a badass hardcover.
Yep. You can either get Volume 1 or Volume 2 or both or the hardcover. We recommend the hardcover because it's got all the cool backup stuff in it.
I recommend it.
And we all have it.
Yes,
except for Jarek.
Actually, I do, because Amanda.
What? Oh, okay.
My fiance owns it. So
no, you're not married yet. You're not stuck community property yet.
That's not how she...
Oh, no. For her, it is.
Oh, okay.
For you, it's not.
Oh, okay. That's a one-way street.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. See, I'm learning this.
And that's really kind of the way marriage is going to be.
Oh, that's
so you might as well just get used to that.
I'm in a room full of suckers.
It's true. Dave's the only free man here. Reading with Rogues is going to have Lazarus. It's going to be September 8th. We're going to do that at the Cuban place Mambo House, which I am excited to try more of their food because their food is delicious.
I'm thinking empanada.
I want
to try
those empanadas.
Everything I've heard about them sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I just want more plantains.
They have like Cuban sandwiches and stuff too, right?
Yep.
It sounds delicious.
It is really good.
The only thing that I've had there was just one of their like regular Cuban sandwiches.
Yeah, the pork sandwich,
pork sandwich, and it was delicious.
Yep.
Everything Cuban is delicious.
That's true. Including
so say we all.
If you lick Fidel Castro, he tastes like strawberries.
I thought he tasted like plantains or something.
Yeah, you're probably, that makes more sense.
Plantains and pulled pork.
Castro.
No, we have solved the mystery of what Fidel Castro tastes like if you lick him. See, this is why you listen to the Roguecast, for informational gems like that.
We have a Fidel Castro scratch and sniff that smells like plantains and pulled pork.
Fidel Castro smell-o-vision.
There's also Ladies' Night this month will be on Wednesday, September 9th. And that is the... No, sorry. Is that... Maybe it's a Tuesday. I don't know.
I think she's doing Wednesdays. No,
yeah, it's a Wednesday.
Doing Wednesdays.
So it's actually... Sorry, yeah, September 9th. That's right, because Tuesday's Reading with Rogues. I got confused.
Yep.
So
okay.
It is the day after Reading with Rogues. It's going to be at Palermo's Italian again.
Yep.
Then on September 26th, we have Batman Day, which we're still looking for what to make that a cool thing. But at the very least, there'll be a free Batman comic for all purchases and... discount on all Batman merchandise and graphic novels.
And a Batman vibe will be in the air.
That's right.
Batman
there may be a Batman playlist playing.
We may force everyone to do the Batusi.
At random times.
I feel just like all day long the playlist is only Danny Elfman's theme.
Yep, that's it. Over and over and over.
You mean Prince. You need to have Prince play.
Oh,
right,
yes.
Yeah.
Bat Dance and...
Let's have Prince play live.
What are the other big Prince songs from that
one? He's not
one?
Doing anything
it's
nowadays.
Like two or three.
Bat Dance and Trust.
Trust,
and,
yes. And whatever he plays in the museum.
That's, I don't remember.
Anyway, that one.
Yeah.
Expect it.
And then finally, in September 27th, on that Sunday, we have the Battle for Zendikar Magic pre-release.
Right.
Okay, so kind of a short news of the week this week, unlike last week's Newsapalooza.
Yeah.
So we'll just hit those real quick. We have a lot of topics we've been holding off on.
Was there a lot of news last week?
Yeah, there was a lot of news last week.
I remember we had staff interviews and like 80 hours of us talking about Secret Wars.
Yep. No, there were also a lot. There was also a lot of news.
Oh, okay.
This week there are but four news items, all of them sort of small. So let's start with the one that I'm excited about, which Adrian Palicki is going to be along with, was it Nick Blood?
Yeah, it's Nick Blood.
I can't remember his real name is Nick Blood. His character name is Lance Hunter.
Yes.
Right.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
His real name sounds more like a character name.
Yeah, his real name should be. I mean, they should just call him Nick Blood. That should have been his casted name.
Except that I would have heard that and I'd be like, that's kind of cheesy. Nick Blood. Nobody has that name.
That's his name. So the two of them have, they announced this spinoff from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and they said, no, it's not happening. And now apparently it's happening again.
Okay.
I'm excited.
Mockingbird, right?
Adrian Palicki is Mockingbird. That's all you need to say.
What's it called?
They have no name for it yet. It's still, they haven't even filmed the pilot yet. But okay. They are now saying it is a green light, it is a go.
Now, I know you were a little bit kind of down on S.H.I.E.L.D. this last season,
yep.
But I know you've liked Adrian Palicki.
Yes.
So you think she's going to, like, take what you don't like about S.H.I.E.L.D., throw it out, and be all Adrian Palicki awesome.
What I'm hoping is that the original showrunners will stay on S.H.I.E.L.D., and someone better will take over the Adrian Palicki, and what we'll have is Adrian Palicki as Mockingbird with writing I actually like.
And maybe it'll infect S.H.I.E.L.D. with awesomeness.
Yeah. Or, you know, cast off S.H.I.E.L.D. like a escape pod, you know, jettisoning. Whatever.
Nick is shaking his head warily.
Yes, Nick doesn't hate S.H.I.E.L.D. as much. I don't hate S.H.I.E.L.D. I just think it's gotten really disappointing.
Jared, do you watch S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I don't watch S.H.I.E.L.D. I should, because, I mean, Jeff Loeb is kind of behind it. But then,
that's true.
Is that a good thing?
Jared likes Jeff Loeb. I like Jeff Loeb.
Loebian. I've liked him at times.
Yeah. All right. Dave pointed this one out. There is a Doctor Who miniatures game coming.
Right. I pointed it out, and I don't remember anything about it. I think it was just
the announcement. But the weird thing is, like, What do you do with that? Doctor Who doesn't shoot things.
Yeah, you know, one of our customers, Darren Bogus, pointed out that there had been, I think, some previous license, like in this, going back as far as the 80s,
mm-hmm.
But I don't think I ever, like, puzzled out what it had been.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, the Doctor is himself explicitly kind of, like, non-violent.
Yeah.
But you could play, like, what's their...
Cybermen, Daleks.
But what's their special forces?
Unit.
Yeah, you could do Unit or
something.
You could
throw in the Centaurans. You could throw tons of stuff in there.
It's interesting. And the thing is, it'll all look cool if you get a bunch of free Doctor Who minis.
It's
you
true.
Know?
Yeah. And depending on how they played it, like, I mean, you could still make a miniatures game that was sort of Doctor-y, where he... You know, a Doctor miniature on the table does, like, you know, cool escapes or use a sonic screwdriver or sick canine on somebody.
Right.
And
then canine tears their throat out.
That's right.
It's much darker than...
Canine killed 10 Centaurans. You win the game. but in any case, it'll be interesting to see, you know, kind of watch for previews. I'm sure they'll start putting stuff
up. Yeah.
So Marvel announced their they have covers for the November issues. Their
right.
cover. Now, one of the things I want to say is... DC is doing this thing where every month their cover theme and their November theme is Looney Tunes crossover, which kind of seems fun.
Which they've got some really great covers.
There's some really fun ones. Theirs are, you can order as much as you want.
Yep.
Marvel's are still very limited. Like, if you want these covers, you have to get an obnoxious amount of Marvel comics. So
yeah. We
probably won't get most of these covers. But it's not because we don't think it's a cool idea. And the idea is cosplayers.
Oh, right. I saw their announcement, and that seemed like a really cool
idea.
Yeah,
so they're going to put, like, a girl who's dressed up as Spider-Gwen. She, you know, they're going at professional cosplayers who do these characters and saying, yeah, we're going to put you on this cover of the comic that you love for the month. That's just a cool thing to do.
I remember when I was a kid, do you remember those occasional photo covers they did in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
Randy?
Mm-hmm.
The two I can remember are, there was an issue of Dazzler that had somebody as Dazzler, very backlit, so she was all glowy.
Yep, and then there was the guy who was dressed as Peter Parker being caught in the alley changing costumes.
Yep. He was just sort of a vaguely Peter Parker's look like, but I was like, that's kind of cool.
It was kind of cool.
Yeah, the covers I've seen so far have been really, really nice. So.
Well, cosplayers have been, it's just been becoming a bigger thing in the last decade or so.
Yeah.
It was always a thing, but they're getting, like, really good now.
They're getting refined.
They're getting scary good. Like, if I was, like, getting into cosplay, I'd be intimidated.
Yeah,
because
you see some amazing things. What's the site, Jerick? It's the RPF.
The RPF. That was where
we
were.
Oh, my God. The role-playing forum.
Mm.
I mean, you go in there and people are making full Iron Man suits, full Halo suits.
Yep.
Of course, our customer, Robin, had an amazing Iron Man suit.
He did.
I think he said it got damaged at some point.
Probably fighting the Ironmonger.
Yeah, I can only assume.
I told him he needed to build a Hulkbuster suit, but he said that was too much.
Now, are these are these going to be like sort of like when I see like the professionally staged ones where like they might use like a fake backdrop or?
So far, it looks pretty straightforward.
Or is this like the con photos where they're kind of off in the corner of a con?
Yeah, more like that.
I mean, these do look kind of like more like professional grade photos and stuff. Like a lot of these. At least,
They're not like shots from a con or anything. Right. It is very. It still has a slickness.
But there's not a lot of backdrops to it or anything like that. Right. Yeah.
All I saw was like sort of thumbnail sized versions of these, but they were already looking good. I was happy to see like Kamala Khan.
Yeah.
The Ms. Marvel one looked really good.
Ms. Marvel. Yeah. It seems like a neat idea, and I felt like it kind of an example of Marvel having a bit more of their once again of their finger on the pulse than DC at the moment.
Yeah,
not to hate on DC, but Marvel just seems so some of their planning on those is a little bit better.
So speaking of DC,
although we can't get as
If you're an actor of any level of fame anymore, you're going to get the question: what superhero would you play if you could play a superhero? It seems to be like somebody asked that question. Somebody asked Nathan Fillion that question, and he came up with an awesome answer. And it was either Ambush Bug or Booster Gold. Which, honestly, Nathan Fillion as Booster Gold would be amazing.
I heard Booster Gold. What's the Ambush Bug?
That was the other thing he said.
He said
Booster Gold or maybe Ambush Bug.
He wants somebody goofy.
Yeah.
Now,
but Nathan Fillion...
goofing around, right?
He was just goofing. They're not actually... He was goofing. It was somebody asked him the question, and he made an answer.
Right.
He's not campaigning. You know, the internet took over, and then now people are like, he's campaigning for it. He's like, he's not campaigning to play Booster Gold. Somebody asked, and he said, oh, I'd be fun.
But it would not be the craziest thing
in
the world.
Nathan Fillion would be a great Booster Gold. I think that'd be fantastic. And then the obvious question is, who do you get to play Blue Beetle? And the obvious answer is Alan Tudyk.
Yep. It's a friend of mine posted that. I like the idea.
Yeah. It's funny, before you said that your friend posted that, that was what I was thinking too.
Really?
Yeah.
He would not have come to my mind, I think, otherwise.
He was the immediate thought I had was Alan Tudyk.
I feel like he's not quite right.
No? Who would you guess for Beetle?
That's what I'm thinking.
Well, there's sort of different versions of Beetle. They've done somewhat more serious versions in the comic. They've obviously had the very silly thing where he and Booster were basically Lucy and Ethel
from
I Love Lucy.
I also would like to see John Hamm as Blue Beetle. I can see John Hamm as Blue Beetle and Nathan Fillion as...
has more appeal. Because John Hamm is one of those guys that he can do...
Oh, John Hamm is great at comedy.
Great comedy.
Yeah.
And be very super still.
But yeah, it's a fun idea.
I want to know who Judi Dench would play.
Judi Dench would be fire.
Judi Dench would be a player.
Madam Web. Wouldn't it be crazy if she asked her that and she just bammed?
She's like, I like Madam Web.
I'm sure Vin Diesel schooled her a little bit.
Yeah, that's true.
They played D&D on the set of, what is it?
The Chronicles of Riddick.
Yep. All right. That'll wrap up news for us this week. We'll be back in just a few minutes or a few seconds to talk about comics for the week. All right, we are talking comics for Wednesday, August 26th. And, Nick, what do you got for us this week?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I have, a Secret Wars.
Predictable.
It's very true. But this is one I was not looking forward to, nor expecting.
And it's a one-shot.
And it is a one-shot. It is Hank Johnson, Agent of Hydra.
I note that cover is styled on the classic Jim Steranko.
Yeah. Which they love to homage.
Shield pop art cover.
Yep, but... this is written by David Mindell, who I did not know, but Randy looked up, and basically he's written a lot of Seinfeld, Larry David, a bunch of comedy stuff.
And Eurotrip.
And Eurotrip, which...
I was about to say he had a pretty serious pedigree, and then you had to go and bring up Eurotrip.
Eurotrip is a fun movie.
Eurotrip is a very fun movie.
No, we were discussing this just the other day. Not a bad movie. Jarek, have you seen it?
I have seen Eurotrip. I have some fondness for it, because it was one of those middle school movies that me and my friends watched.
Michelle Trachtenberg.
It seems like an ideal middle...
Yeah, when you were a middle schooler and you were seeing boobs.
Yeah. I mean, that was great, so...
He grew up with the internet, Randy.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry.
When he was out of his crib, he was seeing boobs.
Well, when we all were out of our crib, we were seeing boobs. Just going to appreciate it.
Fair enough.
I don't want to appreciate it.
But going back to this book, Hank Johnson, Agent of Hydra, it is basically the day in the life of a Hydra agent. What he does between the Hail Hydras. And that actually is a thing. There's a lot of bits with him and his wife. Dealing with sort of going to meetings. There's a funeral that maybe involves agents of Hydra singing Amazing Grace, which I
so
thought
this
was...
is not a dark take on Hydra in which he ruminates on terrorist actions.
No, he actually is just this is what if a normal person...
It's a regular schlub job. Hydra as...
Hydra's workplace comedy.
I mean, the very first panel is basically Nick Fury infiltrating a Hydra base, him getting kicked in the head, and his friend getting shot and killed. and it just got... It has a great sense of humor. The art by... what is it? Michael Walsh, again. Don't know him.
It's nice looking.
It's beautiful.
You know what it reminds me just a touch of? It's more a little more cartoony, but maybe it's that color palette that I see. It actually reminds me a little bit of David Aja on Hawkeye.
Yeah, I can see that.
But I just feel like it really conveyed a great sense of humor. It has... A Hydra baseball team going off against a S.H.I.E.L.D. baseball team coached by Clay Quartermain, which I think is... I mean, they're just great little nods, and...
Do people still know who Clay Quartermain is?
Nope.
They freaking should, because Clay Quartermain is awesome.
Derek, Clay Quartermain is one of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s named agents. I don't know that there's much to him beyond that.
He was on the run with the Hulk during Peter David's run. He's been killed before and brought back. Yeah.
You know how it is. Comics.
Yeah, comics.
And the main character takes his kids out on Halloween for trick-or-treating, and he dresses up as Rage from the Avengers.
Wow.
Which I'm like, okay.
Is Rage that character that sort of, I've never read, but it looks like a blaxploitation character from the 90s?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
He was super angry black man.
Yeah, he turned out to be a 13-year-old kid who had been aged by his superpowers.
You know.
He was in New Warriors.
Yeah,
he was awesome in New Warriors.
He was awesome. Really, though,
the awesome are awesome in quotes.
Yeah, he was awesome. He was great. Okay. They did good stuff with the characters in
New Warriors. Is a fantastic book, and you should all read it.
Fantastic or fantastic in quotes?
No, fantastic. You should read it. And if you don't, you're stupid.
I should read it or read it in quotes.
Do you want me to throw this Guardians of the Galaxy water bottle at you?
Hey.
That's not good radio. It's not good radio. And
that's Brandy's drink.
Anyways. Great sense of humor. I really was impressed with just everything about this book. Highly recommend.
All right.
Sounds like a fun one-shot for people to try out. Obviously, no heavy commitment.
My pick of the week is also a Marvel book, also a one-shot. It is, although it's basically just continuation of the Ant-Man series. Nick Spencer, Will Rosanis, the same creative team.
Wait, it's just a one-shot?
It's just a one-shot. It's Last Days of Ant-Man.
Oh, right.
Because they did Ant-Man... The series was like 5 issues, then they did the annual, then they did this one shot, then they're going to come back and do the new series. So,
is it the same creative team on the new series?
Same creative team on the new series, too.
Okay.
So basically, this is Nick Spencer writing a sort of snarky Ant-Man. It's got that same vibe of something like Hawkman or Spider-Woman, sort of a, you know, bit of a schlub in the Marvel Universe. They use the 90s villain, the Slug.
I don't think I remember him other than, I believe I remember him from the Marvel Universe handbook.
He's a big fat guy.
Yep.
And then they reveal this nursing home that he's been working out of. There's a secret to it that relates to the Last Days of the Marvel Universe. It's a fun little moment. They tie in one of the Nick Spencer's Superior Foes of Spider-Man characters. And basically this is all finale of the previous book and setup for the next one, and yet is also very accessible if you've never read any Ant-Man.
That's what I was wondering is, could somebody try it out if they want to just...
If you like the movie and you're looking for sort of a snarky Ant-Man book, this is a fun read. And I've covered it numerous times before, so I won't say much more than that. Dave, what was your read this week? I understand that you found something we did not expect you to find.
I'm bringing the magical princess power this week, people. Zodiac Star Force. Zodiac Star Force is a new Dark Horse book. That's if you look at the cover, it looks like Sailor Moon. I've never read nor watched Sailor Moon. However, I'm aware that these girls have powers and they fight bad guys.
You're aware that these girls have powers and sometimes they fight bad guys.
Yes. So Zodiac Star Force is sort of a slight spin on the concept. Essentially, I don't know how old the Sailor Moon girls are supposed to be. Probably not legal, but... Sorry, that's a little Jared humor there.
Ouch.
Not Jarek.
Oh.
No, but they were maybe like 14 or 15 or something like that, because in this, they're supposed to be like, they're like seniors, or they're like 16 or 17.
Sure.
And they have, it's like they took down the big bad guy, whoever the big bad guy is, some evil princess or something, and they've all given it up. And they've sort of lost touch the way friends sometimes slip away from each other.
Sure, when you stop fighting evil together.
When you stop fighting evil together.
Yep.
But it's a metaphor for how it can happen in real life. And then a monster attacks. The monster is a metaphor for I don't know what.
Monster metaphor for one of them getting married.
No, like a crisis. Like a crisis. Now, they're still in
high school. One of them getting cancer.
They're still in high school. This ain't Arkansas, Randy.
Wow. Nothing on
today. This is going to be a very blue segment. So this shadow creature attacks one of them, and, you know, she all Sailor Moons up. I forget. I guess they are called the Zodiac Star Force.
She's Zodiac Star Force.
She fights it with her magical sword and, like, gets in contact with a friend, and they've got some, like, there's some sort of backstory in this that's fun. It's a little bit meta because they're like, hey, should we get the band back together, right. Basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're like, oh, you know, it seems like one of them might have, like, her mother might have been killed in what was probably, like, would have been the big climactic sequence.
Sure, yeah.
And so she doesn't want to have anything to do with it. Some of the other ones are like, hey, wasn't it fun back when we used to fight evil? And they're like, yeah, it was dangerous, but it was pretty cool, too, right? You know, we were the best monster fighters there were. So there's, like I say, it's a little bit postmodernist kind of take on it. But I found the characters all likable and nicely differentiated. They fight. There is a nice artwork in it. I don't know quite how to describe it. It's definitely not full on anime style, but it has that sort of vivid color palette of the Sailor Moon look, and it's nice, attractive artwork. But there's a little bit of, like, high school girl stuff, kind of normal stuff here. Like, they go to a party to try and find one of them, and there's, you know, they're sort of making chit chat with one of the guys while they're hanging out. And then suddenly they're fighting monsters a few pages later.
Sure, just like high school.
but I appreciated its slightly meta take on it all. The Sailor Moon sort of as metaphor for a group of girlfriends is what I would say.
Cool. So maybe good for people like enjoying Lumberjanes or Giant Days.
I would say they should definitely check it out. Obviously, if you are just a straight up fan of Sailor Moon, probably the kind of thing you might want to check out.
Cool.
But yeah, I believe actually the closer audience is exactly what you're saying, Randy. You know, Lumberjane type fans.
Cool.
So that's my unexpected pick of the week.
What else is on your stack?
The other stuff I've got, I have this top thing I've just drawn is really, I haven't been following the series, although I liked what I had read, but it's Sinestro.
Yep.
But I have it set aside for the cover.
Yep.
Which I may have to post it on the Fix Store's Facebook tomorrow or
I think somebody already did.
I believe that was already done.
Instagram, nice. Yep. This is what do they call this?
Bombshells.
The Bombshell line. They have their share of male characters in there, and they're all sort of done a little bit like manly pinup style. You know, Superman and Circus, handsome Circus strongman.
Sure.
Well, here is the suave and debonair Sinestro in like a 30s or 20s zoot suit.
Yep.
Of course, all yellow with the giant pants and everything. He's holding a yellow rose in his teeth. He clearly, sort of like the mask.
Yep.
Those of you who are trying to picture a zoot suit, it's the mask. and with the tagline of "Fear the Dance Floor," and they know. Then there's a sort of a sub header: "See the frighteningly fierce Sinestro perform his jumpin' jives." Anyway, it is a masterful cover, and you should pick it up if only for the cover. There's also, is anybody covering this?
Good.
The third issue of Civil War, the popular Secret Wars series that we've all been enjoying.
Yep.
I haven't read it yet, but I think you guys liked it.
Yep.
Some big things.
Yep.
Apparently some big things occur. New Spider-Woman issue. This is also part of the Last Days.
I believe this might be the last issue before. Yeah, this is the last issue of Spider-Woman before they reboot it.
Okay. Interestingly, it has a guest artist on it who's good, but... I think Fitz. Who was the regular artist?
Javier Rodriguez.
It fits his style.
It's not
but it is
as
different.
Good, but it is good.
It is good.
If I'm not mistaken, this is the artist that is going to do the Devil Dinosaur and Moon Girl.
Oh, nice. I'm good with that.
That's cool. But it is also sort of. This takes place right after the big previous storyline has just concluded. So I would actually say that this is probably an approachable issue if you just want to take a peek.
Yep.
Then I've got We Are Robin number 3,
right.
Continuing the another series that we've all been enjoying. And this one has some pretty big revelations in it. In fact, a massive revelation in it. Who's behind the Robins? I've got Cyborg number 2. I was kind of lukewarm on the first issue, but I still want to give it a chance because we like this guy so much, right? Shaft.
Yep.
They got the third issue of Lando. We've talked about Lando before. There's Superman number 43, which continues the big reveal stuff. And in fact, this issue finally reveals precisely how his identity got out.
Oh, okay.
That story's in there.
Yep.
And then finally, the second issue of Godzilla in Hell. And I'll say this. I was initially very disappointed to hear that James Stokoe was not doing the whole series.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed this issue a little more than I expected after having kind of almost written it off.
Yeah.
It's fully painted art inside, which is really stunningly beautiful. So I would say if you like the previous one, go ahead and give this one a look-see. It is all is not lost. What about you guys?
Nick, what else is on your stack?
A wonderful, glorious issue of MODOK.
Is that the final issue, or is there one more?
There's one more.
Right. Are most of these Secret Wars ones going five?
Four, yeah. Between four and five.
Okay, yeah. So there's no set thing.
Nope.
I've covered that. I feel Randy will cover Grayson.
Yep, I'll mention it.
Then there's a new S.H.I.E.L.D. special that kind of... Mark Waid kind of connects the dots between all the things that S.H.I.E.L.D. has been. Fourth issue of Fight Club 2.
Right.
Another issue of Deathstroke, which I'm still enjoying.
I see Superman is in this one.
Yep, Deathstroke fights Superman, and then Superman punches his brain apart.
But does Superman have his powers?
Well, you know, he's both lower-powered, and also, I assume, is Deathstroke amped up for fighting gods
now? I mean,
now?
He's got god swords.
Because on the cover of Deathstroke, he's wearing his regular costume, but he's not wearing that right now, is he?
That's true. I don't know what the deal is with that.
Yeah.
Well, he's wearing his regular costume.
I think this might be a fake Superman.
Or maybe they're in, like, Godland, and in Godland you appear as how you image yourself.
Or maybe it's a god who took Superman's form. We don't know.
We don't know.
Maybe it's Ultraman.
Read the issue, fools.
Read the issue.
Another issue of Captain Marvel and the Carol Corps, which I'm still really enjoying. The art by, it's David Lopez, right?
Yeah. Oh, nice.
So yeah. Fantastic. And, as always, when an East of West comes out, there's rejoicing.
20 issues in.
20 issues in.
That has had that's had the same artist throughout it, right?
Yep. Yeah,
Nick Chakota.
That is fairly impressive. I'm envious of those guys who get to work with artists that talented on that consistent a basis.
So I guess all that's left on my stack, as Nick mentioned, I did read Grayson number 11. This one has some big reveals and some nice sort of fight moments. Great art by Mikhail Genin, and then like a couple graphic novels. Volume 3 of Sunstone. The sort of lesbian BDSM comic that is a graphic novel series done by Steph John Sedgwick, who you might know from Rat Queens or Death Vigil. And I had not been reading this, but so many people are buying it that I finally was like, decided I had a preview copy and I decided to read it. And it's interesting. What it reminds me of more than anything else is sort of a more sexually adventurous version of Strange in Paradise.
Yeah.
Where Strange in Paradise had sort of it really got the characters and the relationships, and it brought in a lot of female readers.
But it wasn't particularly about the sexual angle.
But the writer never went there the lead, Francine, could not decide whether she was actually attracted to her best friend Katu or not.
It was a will-they-won't-they.
And it was always a little frustrating. And there was also a lot of crazy sort of... There was a big mafia thing going on there, and they added in some of this sort of... This is just people who happen to have BDSM sex lives.
Right.
Some of them do, some of them don't.
Kind of like a character drama.
Yeah. Some of them do, some of them don't. Some of them are into tattoos. So there's a whole thing about one of them buying all this fetish wear costumes. There's a thing about one of them... getting a big tattoo. She's a lawyer, and she's getting a big tattoo on her back. Mm-hmm. And in amongst the hot sex, there's plenty of sort of fun character stuff in there, and it's got the great Cedric art. So it's really fun. I if you liked Strange in Paradise but sort of are wishing for something a little more – I don't know. It's edgy but also a little more realistic in some ways.
Yeah,
I
would definitely. Strange in Paradise did go a little bit
– it got a little wacky from time to time. Yeah,
too, also with the gangster stuff you mentioned. And, you know, here's the thing. That's volume 3, so if you decide to check it out, there's actually a decent amount of material.
There's a ton of stuff in there. So, yeah, worth a look. And then the second volume of Image is Wayward, which is the basically Buffy by way of Japan is how I would describe it, is out this week. And it collects issues 6 through 10.
Our staffer Tila really
likes it. I love this book. It's got really nice art by Stephen Cummings, who you might know from the Deadshot miniseries from Pantheon High that he wrote with our friend Paul Benjamin. So
I did not realize that was all the same person.
Yep, yep.
That's very cool.
And this is his strongest art by far, I think. So good stuff. All right, that'll wrap up comics for this week. We'll be back with a whole bunch of movies and TV and video games and podcasts to talk about. For the last couple weeks, the podcast has been stuffed full of news and comics talk, and we have not had a chance to get to topics at all. So I've been saving them up.
It's been lonely.
So we got a whole bunch of topics, movies, TV, stuff we've been watching. video games we've been playing, all kinds of stuff. So we're going to dive into that. We got Jarek here because one of the things we're talking about is a podcast that he put us onto.
It's very fun.
Awesome. But we're going to start with a movie that Nick and I have watched, which is Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Yes.
Which I really liked.
Stars Superman.
Yes.
And
Superman the Lone Ranger.
Yes, and the Lone Ranger.
And a girl you've never seen before who was really good.
Yeah, that's true. Who was the Lone Ranger?
Army Hammer.
Okay.
Yeah.
He was also in Social Network.
Yeah.
Okay.
But basically, the two of them, this is a show I never watched.
Man, I've watched a little bit just because I went back after hearing it was sort of a predecessor to S.H.I.E.L.D. and Stanley kind of stole a lot of it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I also like one of the main characters who plays the Russian. He plays the doctor on NCIS. I forget his name. I'm blanking on it now. Anyways.
In his younger days.
He was the lead in this. And
So basically, it's in the height of the Cold War in the 1960s. It's about a Russian agent from the KGB and a U.S. CIA officer forced to work together against this extremist group that's trying to build a nuclear device.
Yes,
is this like a UN thing?
It is in the show, but in the movie, they are just brought together as a one time thing by British intelligence.
Okay,
the guy they got from that was from Mad Men, which I loved him in that. And then the girl is sort of she's the daughter of a Nazi scientist who knew how to use nuclear weapons, and sort of he's gone missing, and so she's their way in.
Right.
They sort of recover her from East Berlin to try and find this guy before it's too late. There's a Contessa, there's a racetrack, there's an off-road thing. There's all these great sort of 60s spy tropes. There's a boat chase, yeah.
And it's all sort of viewed through the lens of Guy Ritchie, the director.
Yeah, Guy Ritchie who directed it, yeah.
Does it compare to
Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes.
Very much sort of that kind of filter that he uses that blends sort of high action but with a great sense of humor.
Yeah, it's not a goofy movie. Like, the stakes are very real, but the characters are having a good time with it. It's kind of like Bond at his best.
Right.
Sort of like when he's, you know, he knows he's uber confident, knows he's going to pull it off, so he's not real worried about things.
Right. That is kind of one of the fun things about Bond is, in a way, is his swagger.
Yeah. And this, I mean, honestly, after this Mission Impossible, Bond has his work cut out for him because Man from U.N.C.L.E. is just a great 60s spy movie.
Yeah.
This is what you want out of a 60s spy movie.
I mean, they're doing everything from gadgets to...
You know, Bond has kind of staked out, the current Bond has staked out the serious market.
Sort of a post-24 era Bond,
I think that's cool, too.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I think Spectre is going to be some serious shit.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, with Mission Impossible and Man from U.N.C.L.E., the fun factor is there.
Yeah.
I do. I mean, that's what I like about Mission Impossible. I haven't seen the
Man. I mean, I think the stakes were high, but I went to see sort of the back and forth between the two leads.
Yeah.
And their rapport was fantastic.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, just their rivalry and the hilarity of some of their one-upsmanship.
Well, the funny thing is, both these guys brought some baggage with them. The movie's not done that well in the theaters, partly because of the baggage the actors bring, partly because it was up against Straight Outta Compton, which is just a juggernaut.
What do you mean, the baggage?
Army Hammer was Lone Ranger and one of the biggest fails Disney has had.
Oh, yeah.
And is thought of as kind of a stiff in the same way that sort of Eric Bana, one of those guys.
Yeah.
And Henry Cavill is playing a less than a divisive Superman.
Right.
Which is funny because none of us here are particularly fans of the Superman movie.
Yeah.
But I think all of us thought that Henry Cavill did fine as the actual Superman.
Yeah, no, I have no issues with him.
So Henry Cavill's great here. He plays a sort of light and charismatic former thief.
Yeah, I like that little spin. You know, he was a thief, the best thief, got caught by the CIA.
And they recruited him.
Now they've recruited him, and now he's their best agent.
Yeah, that's really fun. But the real surprise was Armie Hammer playing this sort of KGB guy with sort of rage issues.
Yep.
It's easy to make that character either too doofy or too much of just an action guy.
Yeah.
And did a good job grounding him and giving him a good character. So I really enjoyed this. I think it was a great movie, a lot of fun, and definitely worth seeing.
I think most people who see it are enjoying it, but not a lot of people are like rushing to the theaters.
Yeah. You know, rushing to the theaters?
One of the reasons why...
It's my job, Randy.
I seem to remember Man from U.N.C.L.E. showing up in reruns on when I was growing up, in and around. I always avoided it because I think I thought that U.N.C.L.E. just sounded too doofy.
Yeah.
S.H.I.E.L.D. sounds cool as an acronym. Spectre sounds cool. A lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
U.N.C.L.E. sounds ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, U.N.C.L.E. it actually does stand for something. Like
United Nations something.
Yeah.
But I watched the trailer, or not the trailer, but the opening of the first episode of the show just on YouTube. And I was like, oh, this actually looks pretty cool and a little more serious than I thought. I thought it was like Get Smart levels goofy.
Right, no.
I mean, and it also hinged a lot on the leads, Robert Vaughn and David McCallum.
And
now that I can remember that.
Yes. Yeah, they looked really cool. Nick, where did you see the episodes? If it was on Netflix streaming, I'd be watching some.
I think it was.
It was at one point, and I watched a couple of episodes here and there. And it also replays on TV Land.
I used to watch some on TV Land when I was a kid. I mean, I watched a lot of the like old reruns and stuff, and I remember Man
it's,
Uncle.
Yeah, it still plays today, so they do reruns every, I think, Saturday night or something like that.
Yeah, for those with cable.
Yep. I'm just nodding my head. Like, that's neat. That's cool for certain people.
All right, Nick, you also saw Cop Car.
I did. My cable provider decided to send me a free movie, and I was like, sure, I will take this
free
movie.
Look at Mr. Fancy with his cable TV and his free movies and his caviar.
Oh, exactly.
Watching with a monocle and a top hat.
Well, of course, that's how you watch movies. What are you talking about?
Cop Car.
Sorry.
Anyway,
it was like that.
Cop Car is now available on streaming. It's going to be. You can buy it from iTunes. You can buy it from Amazon.
Future director of Spider-Man, right?
Correct.
And that was the sort of the big thing for me, because there were a couple other movies I was like, I can watch that. I watch that. But I was like, okay, I have to see what this guy can. It's John Watts, right?
Yeah.
And this guy can Kevin Bacon in it
can bring to the table. And I you know, after watching it, I read a couple of reviews, and I do have to agree that it starts out really, really strong, and towards the end it kind of loses some steam. But overall, I thought the performances from the two kids were very genuine. They felt very much believable.
Going by what I saw in the preview, these two kids find an abandoned cop car.
Yeah.
They kind of take it out. They're, like, pretty young.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're actually running away from home, and they're sort of just wandering through, away from their house, through, like, woods area, and stumble across a cop car. And as kids, they're about, like, I want to say between 8 and 10.
Yeah, it seems like a very Stand By Me-ish kind of thing.
Yeah, and it feels very Stephen King when he's writing kids. They're believable.
And they go on, like, a bit of a joyride.
Yeah, and it sort of escalates from there, especially once Kevin Bacon joins the fray as the sheriff, but he's definitely twisted and bent and sort of a villain.
The trailers sort of, I think some of the quotes mention No Country for Old Men.
I think
it just is like maybe sort of an inspiration or some of the tone of it. And I got that vibe that like there might be some dark violence and stuff in this.
There is some dark violence. There is. Again, I thought the cinematography was good. I actually thought the directing was fantastic. So, whether or not John Watts can bring that same sort of thing to a superhero movie, I'm not 100% sure.
But this is not like some giant stumble or anything.
No. I actually think it's a pretty big, thing for him.
Is there any point at which anyone swings through the air on a web line?
No.
Okay. Is there a green goblin in it?
No.
Does anyone stick to a wall?
No.
Oh, okay.
But I'm betting somebody gets punched or beaten.
There's some cool gunfights, things like that. Yeah. So
I would like to see it. It looked kind of my alley from the trailers, and so I'm glad to hear it seems like a pretty good movie.
That's good. That's good news. I watched on Netflix the show Sense8.
Yep.
Which I don't know if anybody else here has watched that. Has anybody else watched any of it?
I watched the first 5 minutes of it.
Okay.
I watched the first five minutes of it.
So this is the Wachowskis combined with J. Michael Straczynski doing a 10-episode or 12-episode? I don't remember.
I think it was 10 episodes.
Is it 10?
Talents, I'd say, that we have really enjoyed at times and found to be kind of way off their game at times.
Yes, it is very uneven. This is one of the better projects from both of them. This was really good. It is about a group of 8 people all around the world who sort of start sharing each other's senses. So they can see each other. They can hear what's going on. They start sharing their skills. So there is everything from a Korean businesswoman who turns out to be a mixed martial artist to a driver of a van in, I think it's Kenya.
Uh-huh.
Named the Van Dam, which is van. That's a van. That's the Van Dam. And he idolizes Van Dam. And to a Mexican soap opera star, like action star, who turns out to be gay.
Mm-hmm.
To a cop in Chicago. They're all sort of in different places. There's a woman in India who's about to get married. And there's a conspiracy. There is a sort of meta plot about this organization looking for what they call sensates, these people who can connect with each other on this level.
That sounds a little like Heroes and other shows we've seen like that, where
yeah.
a lot of people get some kind of ability and there's some group tracking them.
But honestly, a lot of it is just sort of these people having very interesting lives and sort of seeing, connecting with other people and how that all connects. There's also a very notable, there's a trans woman named Nomi in San Francisco, and she's a main character. She was clearly sort of a darknet hacker and has sort of those abilities. And she has a girlfriend played by Martha Smith from Doctor Who.
Oh, right.
Playing Amanita is her, I believe, her girlfriend's name. And she's awesome. The two of them, anytime they were on the screen, I was super happy. They were great.
Nice.
But it is a really interesting show that sort of looks at the connections between different people in the world. There's great use of music. It's very beautifully cinematography. There is a...
Wachowskis usually bring that.
When they do this sort of stuff where they're all working together with their abilities as they start to learn each other, there's a scene in episode 3 where they do the four non-blondes song, What's Going On.
Yeah.
And they sort of do this thing where they're all in different places and they're all sort of singing the same song at the same time. One of them's doing karaoke and he's doing that song. It's a really cool moment. And they do the same thing with like a fight scene where like all they're trading their abilities. Then there's later on, there's sort of a heist thing. And hilariously, in episode 6, there's like a sex scene where they're all sort of having sex with each other. And it's like gay, straight, trans all together. And they sort of blend it. And it's very, very odd, but very, very beautifully done.
So it sounds like sort of for like a slightly action suspense show, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a little more progressive, you know, a little bit more ambitious than maybe most.
But it's also sort of heavy drama stuff. It's great character work. Like you will very much, there's a lot of characters in there. There's 8 main characters plus supporting characters.
Right.
And I never felt lost. I always felt like I knew what was going on and where. And
so you felt like you had a good sense of the 8.
I had a good sense of the 8.
That's very surprising. Granted, I wasn't bored or anything by the five minutes that I saw. It was just really late at night,
yeah.
and I just fell asleep. But I was very surprised and very kind of happy to see Daryl Hannah in there.
Yeah.
I don't know if her
She is not
stands.
In it much. She's in more of a background role.
But
the guy from Lost... Saeed. Blanking
Saeed.
His name.
Anyway,
yeah.
We know
he is one of the main characters, and he's a big
cool.
character.
I like
it.
That guy.
It's really great, and I definitely recommend people watch it. Is also one I recommend watching 2 or 3 episodes at a time because you'll enjoy it more that way.
Yeah.
All right. On to John Oliver.
Right.
So we talked about last week of John Oliver before. I think maybe when it was first starting.
Right.
Mentioned that.
It's kind of the heir apparent for The Daily Show.
Yes.
You know, we'll see how the new guy is on The Daily Show, but as far as, like, that the veteran, like, incisiveness that Jon Stewart brought to the table and just that command of both comedy and news simultaneously, John Oliver is the heir apparent.
Well, he's doing investigative journalism, basically, and turning it into a comedy show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and honestly, pushing some buttons that Daily Show didn't. This isn't really a weakness of The Daily Show, but it's a potent evolution.
Yeah, yeah.
And
well, notably in the last week, not this week, but previous week, he started a church.
He did start a church.
Our Lady of Perpetual Exemption.
Yes. As a very, very public method of spoofing, satirizing, and calling attention to the excesses of
televangelists.
Yes.
Which I think you thought had disappeared.
I thought they were gone. I remember them from the 80s. They were a big part of the people yelling at me about playing D&D. Yeah.
They still exist.
Yeah,
they
didn't know
they still exist, and they have like gold Learjets and stuff.
Yeah, it's extremely predatory, and
it's disgusting,
and they're exempted from taxes. And John Oliver basically set up a church, like a 1-800. You can't believe this is legal.
Yeah,
did a sort of a spoof church, and it seems to have taken off.
Right.
He did a little segment on it this week at the end of the show.
A lot of people have sent him things.
Seeds. They sent him actual seeds.
Oh, yes. Right. That was a thing in there, yeah. Because, you know, this is a big thing that the televangelist did that he pointed out, which is you send in seed money, which is a scam in which the idea is that if you send $1 or $2 or like $100, it will be – that's the seed.
It'll return back to you.
God will make it – it will revisit you 100-fold. Yeah.
And they talked about a woman who didn't fight her cancer. She sent all her cancer-fighting money to the televangelist instead.
He goes after some real scumbags.
Yeah,
he does.
I
love it. And, and I'm already hearing that there may be investigating – this may be prompting some legal action or some reform for these guys.
Well, it's not just that. That's just every sort of thing he tackles has been – interesting.
He's talked about the sports stadiums and how they're so. I mean, he's gone after a lot
of another one where he had an effect. Speaking of sports stadiums, is the FIFA thing.
Yeah,
he went after the corrupt head of FIFA and all the endemic corruption.
That thing all tattered. They all fell the next couple of weeks. Yeah.
It actually had an effect. But it's also. He's hysterical.
Yeah, he's really funny.
He's a little more uncensored than Jon Stewart.
Yep. Also, it's HBO. He doesn't have to be censored.
Correct. So he'll when he thinks something is effed up, he'll say it.
Yeah. Well, and they do weird, funny things. Like they showed. Remember the Russian space geckos?
Yes.
They talk about bring back our geckos.
Yes.
They've also made great use of social media with stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I forget what else. Oh,
he's squaring off, by the way, with the head of FIFA.
Yeah.
Their videos. Yes. Trade offs.
That was amazing.
Threatening each other. Hysterical. Was quite amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of this, if you don't have HBO, a lot of this is available on YouTube.
I do not have HBO. I tend to catch it on YouTube.
Yep.
Well, the main segments are.
Yeah.
Catching a lot of the extra stuff, week.
Yeah.
But you will get a good highlight.
Oh, view. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, we all highly recommend catching whatever you can of this show because it is amazing. I only wish it was on every night.
Yeah, like me John too. Stewart was. But then it wouldn't be as good. They need the time to put it together. They're off for the next 2 weeks, so...
I know. I heard him say that at the end, and I was kind of just a little... Yeah. Very sad.
Your heart sunk a little
bit.
Also on HBO, and very different, David Simon, who did The Wire, has a 6-part miniseries directed by Paul Feig, who you might remember from Crash and other movies, called Show Me a Hero, that is a 6-part miniseries about a young mayor in Yonkers, New York in the 1980s. There was a fight about zoning issues. Basically, this
is based on a true story.
Yes,
got it.
This judge had basically said that they had to put 200 low income. They had to put more low income housing in Yonkers, New York, which is sort of a white Republican area.
Right.
And there was a lot of concern about the projects basically coming into the middle class area. Right. And this kind of thing happens all the time. But for whatever reason, this sort of caught fire. There was a mayoral race involved in it. The city council was fighting the judge and all this kind of stuff. This sounds boring as hell. I'm aware.
It actually doesn't sound boring to me,
but. It sort of sounds like a civics lesson, and I, much as I love David Simon, I know he sort of does this kind of thing, and I thought, okay, well, I'll watch this because I want to talk about it for my TV podcast, and my friend's a big David Simon fan, and I was like, okay, I'll watch this, and I'll probably watch an episode and give up on it, and instead, I am utterly riveted. It is so good. The lead guy is Oscar Isaac, playing sort of the main, he's the young mayor, and that is a guy you may know as he's going to play Apocalypse in X-Men Days of Future Past, and he is playing something else notable in comics. I can't remember what else he's been cast in. But
if I had to guess, these probably characters, this is, you mentioned the civics lesson fear.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes I notice, you know, like say with some, even people I like Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah.
Sometimes he casts rather clear-cut heroes and villains.
Yeah.
But the director, who's the producer?
David Simon. He's a former journalist.
He is a guy who does not strike me as a guy who does cardboard characters.
There is, I mean, Alfred Molina is playing a Republican city councilman who is very much he has a toothpick in his mouth at all times. It is basically like a mustache twirling villain.
To be fair, I think there's been that. There are share of politicians that are exactly that.
Person. But he is definitely playing sort of the Clyde. We're never supposed to sympathize with him. He's kind of a jerk. But also, Catherine Keener is in there as an older woman who's sort of one of the people fighting against it, but is also sort of rational about the whole thing. And there's a variety of people playing people living in the projects and dealing with their own personal lives and. It's really, really interesting.
Is this a finite series,
right? It is 6 episodes. They're doing 2 episodes a week, so it'll conclude next week.
So it will essentially kind of give you like a cutaway view of
complete
all the
story.
Stuff that was happening in this, the politics and everything surrounding this real story.
Yeah, I love this story. My non-TV watching wife actually got my HBO Now password to watch it on her phone, which I yelled at her about, but she's still watching it on her phone. She insists that if you hold the phone up to your face, it's the same size as a TV screen. I tried to explain to her that's not how it works.
Did you show her the David Lynch video?
I should show her the David Lynch video.
We have to attach the David Lynch video to this podcast. David Lynch, years ago, was part of some interview, right when phones were for the first time being able to stream movies, he had some thoughts on
He has
matter.
An opinion.
It's short. It's probably like 30 seconds, but you're going to want to see it.
Yep. Anyway, Show Me a Hero is – and it comes from a line from, I think, F. Scott Fitzgerald. Okay. Show me a hero and I'll write you a tragedy.
Interesting.
It's so good. It is it's 6 hours long. It'll all be on HBO Now as of next week. Make time to watch this because it's one of the best things I've seen on TV this year.
Bold words.
All right. And before we get to our podcast, one last thing I want to mention. I played the Arkham Knight DLC.
Oh, yeah. It was the Batgirl.
Batgirl and Red Hood.
right?
And
this is two separate DLCs?
Two separate. The Red Hood is $1.99. It was also a Xbox exclusive, wasn't it, I think?
No, it was a PlayStation exclusive.
No, one PlayStation.
No, it was a GameStop exclusive.
So you play Jason Todd taking on Black Mask. You shoot a lot of people. It's kind of weird. But it's fun. It's a little brief thing, kind of like the Harley Quinn
DLC. I'm not used to those, so I haven't played this game. But in general, it seems like lots of batarang throwing. I hadn't seen any much shooting.
Yeah, no, it's weird.
But do the mechanics at least...
The mechanics work.
Is it still cool and everything?
Yeah, it works perfectly well. And it's kind of funny because you know how Batman does all these brutal-looking takedowns?
Yeah.
Well, with Red Hood, he actually kills people.
Right, like when just put a gun up to their chest and just...
Yep.
Straight up execution.
Yeah, when he does the takedowns, he'll like snap a guy's neck, or he'll put the gun in his face and shoot him. He'll have guys who's you know how Batman interrogates people in Arkham Knight, and at the end he punches them out or whatever. Well, Red Hood shoots him in the face.
So this is going to explain the sudden rise in popularity for Red Hood.
Yeah, yeah. But then the Batgirl DLC came out, and it is a sort of a prequel. It has Batgirl and Robin teaming up to rescue Commissioner Gordon from the Joker in an abandoned amusement park.
Which, as we noted, was kind of an inversion of the Killing Joke.
It's really fun. It is like all the Arkham Knight DLC, basically the same moves and that kind of thing. But Batgirl makes heavy use of the hacking mechanic, which makes sense. She and Robin teaming up is a lot of fun. It was like $7, and I played it in like an hour. It's not a long DLC, but it's fun. If you're a Batgirl fan, I definitely recommend it. And now we move on to the Fat Man on Batman.
Right. You said we'll be getting to our podcast in a minute. I'm like, we're in the middle of the podcast.
No, the podcast we're going to talk about.
The podcast within the podcast.
The podcast that Jarek is here for. So, Jarek, discuss for us Fat Man on Batman, because you're the one who brought us all to this.
This is true. So, Fat Man on Batman is Kevin Smith's podcast about Batman. I mean...
I was shocked to hear that you could... I mean, Batman's the most, like, about the most popular hero there is.
Yeah.
But that there would be a continuing series only about Batman.
Yeah. Well, when you think about it, I mean, how many people have worked on something Batman-related over the years?
It has been around since, like, the late 1930s.
Yes.
Yeah. He just celebrated his 75th, like, was it last year?
Yeah, you believe Scott Snyder, I believe it's Totemic, has been around longer than that.
There you go. So, it's a really good podcast. I mean, Kevin Smith gets a lot of people. The first couple of episodes are a bunch of people from the animated series, which I have a very strong connection to, as I'm sure most of us do.
Yep.
But that was the formative years for me for Batman. That's
when you told me some of the people that he's had, this is where I took interest, because I was like, well, I can imagine you could get some small-time writers and artists at any given time.
Yeah.
But like let's talk about a few of the animated people he's had on.
So the big kickoff, as he refers to him multiple times in the thing, the fifth Beatle of his podcast is Paul Dini,
right?
Who really kind of paved the way with the animated series. He said Kevin Conroy on there, Tara Strong.
Who's Tara Strong?
Tara Strong,
Harley Quinn,
Batgirl, and now she voices Harley Quinn.
But she was Batgirl,
right?
Yeah.
Right.
Mark Hamill has one of the best ones in the entire series. And then later he starts
he's got to do some voices in there.
Oh, he does. He gets a bunch more like comics writers and artists and he even gets like Dan DiDio in there at one point.
And he survives it.
But I mean, Kevin Smith is kind of
he had Denny O'Neill.
He has Denny O'Neill.
Basically as legendary as you can get.
Yeah.
When we were talking about our Mount Rushmore of Batman writers, Denny O'Neill has to be.
Denny O'Neill has to be on it because he also was editor for a long time.
Yeah, that's true.
He was editor during the Chuck Dixon years, which is sort of the stuff
that
I think I definitely grew up on. I think Nick did too. And Jarek was big in the Chuck Dixon stuff too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then, of course, he has Grant Morrison on.
Right. And has had him on multiple times.
He's had three episodes now with Grant Morrison.
Oh, really?
But the first two are back-to-back ones, and it's sort of...
It's like 4 hours long.
It is like 4 hours. But once you hear the mellifluous voice of Grant Morrison, his Scottish brogue, you will want to listen to all 4 hours.
I had to turn it up because I couldn't always understand what Grant Morrison was saying unless it was loud enough for me to hear it.
Oh, really?
Morrison does talk a little quiet. It's one of the podcasts where he definitely speaks a little more...
Well, you put quiet plus accent, and it's a little...
It's a little difficult to hear him.
So Jarek has listened to all of this. Dave, you've listened to...
I've listened to both of the first two episodes, which the titles are, if you're looking for this, it's Bat-Bard.
Episode 26 and 27.
And Bat-Christ.
Yes, which will tell you the levels to which... I don't know if people here have really heard Grant Morrison talk before. First of all, he's insane. But second of all, he's brilliant.
Yeah.
And he's, really listenable to, even about projects you might not be interested in.
Well, one of the things I want to say, there is this perception, and especially amongst some of my DC friends who don't like Morrison,
they'll
do this really derogatory thing like, oh, he's done so many drugs, and he's just a crazy person, and he's not.
No.
Grant Morrison is a very down-to-earth, thoughtful guy. Yeah. And in this, he's not doing the wacky thing. Like, he is just talking about writing Batman, and he thinks these things through much more than a lot of writers do, but he's not in there talking about how I did some mushrooms and then I wrote Batman. It's very much more
He will explain some of that stuff, and he's extremely cogent when he explains it.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, well, Jarek, you were telling me about some of the, you know, the things that he likes would explain to him about, like, his interpretation of Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns. And how he looks at it one way, and Kevin Smith will just be like, oh my god, that was the most, that's an amazing interpretation. I've read this book a million times.
Yeah.
I've never thought about it like that. And he does seem to approach everything from this, you know, kind of somewhere between madness and genius interpretive quality.
Is this podcast where the sort of Grant Morrison's hypothetical ending for Killing Joke came from?
Oh, maybe it was. Okay, that's where that came from.
Is it? Because I have not encountered it in these...
I'm pretty sure it was.
Maybe it's in the third part?
I actually believe it's in the third one.
Okay. That would make sense.
It's the finale to the third one.
He was also... In the part that I'm listening to, I'm only maybe 20, 30 minutes in. He's talking about using Batmite and the many nation Batmans, and talking about sort of trying to repurpose the stuff that was ridiculous. He's like, he actually said, like, I tried to see what was the stuff we're all embarrassed of, and what can I make of it?
Right. He like deliberately sought out the stuff we kind of all try and like turn our eyes away from Batman's history.
Yeah, I mean, his entire run of Batman is sort of just a celebration of what Batman has been. Is and will be. I mean, the 60s era.
It all leads up to, like, his kind of grand unified theory of Batman.
Yeah. Yeah.
In which all of those, to him, existed. It's all one guy.
Yeah.
And he kind of has an explanation for how that works that's actually pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. I actually really kind of, like, I would say that I subscribe to that notion of Batman, that kind of it's a progression, and you don't just omit certain years of his history. I mean, the campy 60s era where, you know, the Adam West Batman stuff, you know, you wrap that into his culture of who Batman is and how it kind of builds and how that progresses into what becomes the Denny O'Neil Batman of the 70s. And
so, yeah, in Grant Morrison's sort of grand unified theory, which, you know, shows up in the comics, but he also outlines it here, you know, like in 1938, that was Batman at like age like 20 or so, when he was like, you know, a tough vigilante and he used guns and everything.
Right.
And then he, like, you know, in, like, when he was 21 or 22, he met Robin, and Robin was kind of that, like, sort of a, like, a more innocent, you know, earnest person, and he needed him, and Robin needed a father figure. And he kind of goes through how each one of those represents different eras and his age. And there's a certain point, like, where Robin goes off and joins the Teen Titans, that he's like a bachelor again.
Yeah.
And that's like Batman of the 70s, when he's like
James Bond Batman. That's James what Bond. Morrison described, that, like, that's how he saw Batman, as sort of the Harry Chest Love God 70s Batman. Yeah.
Yep.
and throughout the podcast, I mean, he himself refers to, like, his Batman, his ideal Batman was the Denny O'Neil Batman. That was his Batman.
Yeah.
And which is funny because the animated series Batman too.
But it's funny because he created two new interpretations of Batman, at least, because his Uber Bat from Justice League, he was talking about, you know, he's like, to him he was writing him as the 70s James Bond Batman,
right.
But to us, we all saw the Uber Bat, and that became a thing.
The Bat God.
And then Kevin Smith talks about how when he's writing, he's trying to write Morrison's Batman.
Right. And yet, you know, I think he says that, but he also, his Batman was clearly a little bit more down to earth because that's where Kevin Smith's concerns are.
Yeah.
Now, I'll say this, I liked Kevin Smith as an interviewer better than I expected to.
Me too. I mean, I have my issues. One is that he does do, as Dave mentioned, that Chris Farley, remember that when he did that one thing? That was awesome.
Right.
He gets a little too busy telling Grant Morrison how great he is. And it's sometimes like, okay, we get it, you like him, just kind of maybe a little more distance. And also, when he blazes up in the middle of the interview, I hear the lighter, I hear him coughing, and it's just kind of distracting.
It is a little distracting at first, but like I say, it kind of became background noise for me as I'm making my way through. Like,
yeah.
And now I'm probably like hour five of listening.
As you make your way through the sweet, sweet sounds of Grant Morrison's voice.
Grant Morrison, so yeah, like, you know, obviously we're zeroing in on the Morrison stuff, and he is mesmerizing to listen to.
Yeah.
I have to say, If you want to try out, and I heard that in this third one, he says those first two are some of the most popular podcasts that we did. So this is like one of the best episodes. And you know, if you want to try it out, I would highly recommend
this. Yeah.
You know, to give Smith his due, I also feel like he asked some very lucid questions.
He does.
And one of the things I liked, Jarek and I were talking about this earlier, is he'll sometimes, you know, Grant Morrison will kind of throw out something like, throw out an idea, and he's starting to move on, and Kevin Smith will say, oh, wait, hold on a minute, what do you mean by that? And he'll kind of ask him to explain it and walk him through it. And I really liked when he did that. A lot of times he kind of helps, brings out stuff that I think doesn't normally get talked about.
Yeah.
Jarek, what are the other notable episodes that best episodes that you think?
Best episodes? The very first one with Paul Dini is pretty amazing. You get a lot of insight into what went on behind the scenes of the animated series, kind of how it formed, and Paul Dini's progression through through the DC animated universe. And then the Mark Hamill one is absolutely one of my favorites. It's a two-parter. He's just such an animated person. As much as...
animated person?
It really is. As much as, you know, Kevin Smith likes to talk, most of the episodes are just Mark Hamill kind of going off on his thing and just reeling it.
You were telling me that Kevin Smith is also good at bringing out people who are maybe a little bit more quiet. He'll kind of give them good prompts to get them going.
Mm-hmm.
Did you say that there was one where he and Paul Dini essentially live cast like Mask of the Phantasm?
They do. They've got a few. They're called Dini Dossiers. I think there's four of them.
Okay.
They basically do a commentary track where they play the movie and they'll tell you, you know, ready, set, go. And they play an episode of Batman the Animated Series. They've done Mask of the Phantasm and Return of the Joker as well. Which
sort of bonus commentaries?
Right. It's just bonus commentaries. Cool. And he talks about... it's different than what you would typically get on like a DVD commentary. There's a few more ramblings that kind of go off in random tangents, but there's also a lot of things that they may not explain, like, oh, the true back for this that they didn't really want us to use, and this,
right.
Maybe this was our original idea for this. And
stuff you get up on the DVD when the company is actually listening.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I thought. What I kind of liked about it is that sort of the uncensored nature. Grant Morrison talks about stuff that he probably wouldn't at a, you know, an interview with Newsarama or something like that.
Right.
Even though he's covering some of the same territory.
Right.
But he'll talk about some of the stuff he wouldn't otherwise. He's talking about his upcoming Wonder Woman graphic novel, the Wonder Woman Earth 1, in this third one. And he's mentioning how, you know, he's trying to, like, get, you know, talk about a lot of different aspects of women in it, including occasionally their adversarial nature. And I don't mean, like, guys and girls, but, like, he mentions at that time when his, like, mother and sister were, like, in the kitchen, you know, one of them with, like, a pot of boiling water.
The other one with a knife.
And one with a knife, and they were, like, ready to kill each other, literally. And he's like, you know, he's like, I want to bring a little of that in there, too.
Okay, all right,
and
yeah.
And I'm like...
He's lived a very fascinating life.
Yeah.
He has some interesting biographical stuff in there, too. Talks about all the...
talks about his dad, talks about the boys' school. There's some interesting stuff,
And also all the fried food that kills everybody in...
Right, that was... Yeah, that was funny.
Fried Mars bars.
Yeah.
And he still lives in Glasgow, or not far from.
He does. Yeah. He lives... he still lives there, I guess, to this day with his wife.
Yep. I guess Alan Moore both channel the magic of their birthplaces by living there.
anyway, yeah, so definitely check out Fat Man on Batman. I'll provide a link, especially to those two episodes with Grant Morrison.
And thank you to Jarek for pointing us to that. I've had a very good time listening to those.
Yep, it is on my list that I'm listening to in the car right now. So, all right, that'll wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next time, and until then,
Yo-Joe!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.